Act 3. 64. Exterior, Robbie's Lincoln, with Robbie. Day. He claws at the driver's side door. Down the street, a number of townsfolk are watching him curiously. George Kirby.
Everything all right up there, Beals?
Robbie doesn't answer the old guy. He gets his car door open and dives inside. He has a CB radio under the dash, and now he yanks the mic off its prong. He punches the power button, punches in channel 19, and speaks. All during this, he keeps casting panicky glances at the open door of the Clarendon house, in terror that Martha's killer will show up. Robbie.
This is Robbie Beals for Constable Anderson. Come back, Anderson. This is an emergency.
65. Interior, Anderson's Market, day. The market is as crowded as ever. Cat and Tess Marchant, a motherly-looking woman in her mid to late 40s, have been checking folks out just as fast as they can, but now everyone freezes as the radio spews out its excited babble. Robbie, voice.
Come back, damn it, Anderson. We've got a murder over here. Martha Clarendon's been beaten to death.
A dismayed, disbelieving murmur goes through the shoppers it's at. Their eyes get big. Robbie, voice.
The guy who did it is still in the house, Anderson. Anderson, you come back. Do you hear me? You're always around when it comes to unwanted advice. Where are you when...
Tess Marchant takes the microphone from the radio like a woman in a dream. Tess.
Robbie, this is Tess Marchant. Mike's not...
Robbie, voice.
I don't want you. I want Anderson. I can't do his job and mine, too.
Cat takes the mic.
He had an emergency at home. Alton went with him. It was his little
Just then, Mike and Hatch come in through the door. Cat and Tess look incredibly relieved. A low murmur runs through the crowd. Mike makes about 3 steps into the room, then stops, realizing something very much out of the ordinary is going on here. Mike.
What?
What is it? Nobody in the market will answer him. Meantime, the radio continues to squawk. Robbie, voice.
What do you mean, an emergency at home? There's an emergency right here. An old woman murdered, a lunatic, in Martha Clarendon's living room. I want the town constable.
Mike walks quickly to the counter. Cat gives him the mic as if glad to be rid of it. Mike.
What's he talking about? Who's murdered?
Tess.
Martha, he says.
Another louder murmur this time. Mike pushes transmit button. I'm here, Robbie. Just a minute. Robbie, voice.
Never mind just a minute, damn it. I could be in a life-threatening situation here.
Mike ignores the man for the moment, holding the mic against his chest and talking to the 24 or so islanders who have clumped together at the heads of the aisles, staring at him, stunned. There hasn't been a murder on this island for almost 70 years, unless you count Dolores Claiborne's husband, Joe, and that was never proved. Mike, you folks back off now and give me a little privacy. I get $6,000 a year to be constable. Let me do the job you pay me for. They back off, but are still listening. How can they help it? Mike, meanwhile, turns so his back is to them and he's facing the radio and the lottery ticket dispensers. Mike, where are you, Robbie? Come back. 66. Interior. Robbie in his car. Behind him, we can see townspeople, probably a dozen of them, standing in the street and watching. They have worked themselves quite a bit closer, but don't dare come all the way. The door to Martha's house still stands ominously open. Robbie.
Martha Clarendon's house on Atlantic Street. Where did you think I was? Bar Harbor? I'm...
A great idea occurs to him.
I'm keeping the man inside at bay. Now, get your ass down here.
He racks the mic, then fumbles in the glove compartment. Under the jumble of maps, town documents, and Whopper wrappers, he finds a little pistol. He gets out of his car. 67. Exterior. Robbie. Robbie calls down to the cluster of folks.
You stay where you are.
With his authority thus exerted, Robbie turns toward the house and points his gun at the open door. He has recovered a certain amount of his toad-like savoir-faire, but he's not about to go back in there. The man in there, didn't just kill Martha Clarendon. He knew where Robbie was when Robbie's mother died. He knew Robbie's name. The wind gusts, blowing Robbie's gray-streaked hair back from his brow, and the first few snowflakes of the storm of the century go dancing past his face. 68. Interior. Anderson's Market. With Mike, Hatch, onlookers. Mike stands with the microphone in his hand, trying to think what to do next. As Cat Withers takes the mic and racks it, he makes up his mind. Mike, to Hatch. Let's take another ride, all right? Hatch.
Sure.
Mike. Cat, you and Tess are minding the store. Raising his voice. All you folks just stay and finish your shopping, all right? There's nothing you can do on Atlantic Street, and whatever's happened over there, you'll know it soon enough. As he speaks, he moves behind the cash register. He reaches beneath it. 69. Interior. The shelf. Close-up. On it are a .38 and a pair of handcuffs. Mike takes both. 70. Interior. Angle on Mike. He puts the handcuffs in one coat pocket and the .38 in the other. This is done quickly and deftly. None of the goggle-eyed customers see. Cat and Tess do, though, and it brings the reality of the situation home to them. Crazy as it may be, there could be a dangerous criminal on Little Tall. Cat.
Do you want me to call your wives?
Mike. Absolutely not. Then he looks at the avidly watching islanders. If Cat doesn't, one of them will, as soon as he or she can reach the nearest phone. Mike. Yeah, I guess you better. But make sure they know the situation is under control. 71. Exterior. Anderson's Market. Mike and Hatch hurry down the steps, and the camera tracks them to the island services utility vehicle. The snow is still just flurrying, but we can see that it's thicker now. Hatch.
Snow's early.
Mike stops with one hand on the driver's side door handle. He takes a deep breath, preparing himself, then lets it out. Mike. Yeah, it is. Let's go. They get in and drive away. Meantime, people have been drifting out onto the porch watching them. 72. Exterior. The Robbie Beals mannequin. The propeller on the beanie is now turning briskly. 73. Exterior. The town dock. The waves crash high against the pilings, throwing spray. The work of securing the boats and getting loose gear under cover has progressed quite a bit. We focus in on George Kirby, an older guy, 60-ish, Alex Haber, 35, and Cal Fries, a 20-something. Alex points west toward the end of the docks and the reach beyond. Alex Haber.
Look at there, at the mainland.
74. Exterior. Mainland, from the dock's point of view. The mainland is about 2 miles away and quite clear. Gray-green woods, mostly. 75. Exterior. Resume dock with Sonny, Alex, and Cal. Alex Haber.
When you can't see over there no more, it's time to get in while you can. And when you can't even see the reach no more, it's time to head down to the town hall, whether you've heard the siren or not.
Cal Fries to George.
How bad do you think it'll be, Unc?
George Kirby.
Maybe the worst we ever saw. Come on, help me with the last of these nets.
Pause.
I wonder if that fool Beals has any slight idea what he's doing up there.
76. Exterior. Atlantic Street, in front of Martha's house. The fool Beals is still being the good sentry, standing in front of his Lincoln with his .38 pointed at the open door of the Clarendon house. Snow is coming down more thickly now. It's scattered across the shoulders of his topcoat like dandruff. He's been here for a while. Down below, a little gathering of watchers, Mrs. Kingsbury and Davy Hopewell are back among them, moves aside to allow the island services vehicle through. It pulls up beside the Lincoln. Mike gets out from behind the wheel, Hatch from the passenger seat. Hatch.
You want the shotgun?
Mike. I guess we better have it. You just make sure the safety's on, Alton Hatcher. Hatch leans back into the truck, fumbles and reappears with the shotgun that is ordinarily kept latched under the dash. Hatch ostentatiously checks the safety, and then they approach Robbie. Robbie's attitude toward Mike all through this is one of confrontation and contempt. The history of these feelings will never be fully explored, but its basis is undoubtedly Robbie's desire to keep all the reins of power in his own hands. Robbie.
It's about time.
Mike. Put that thing away, Robbie. Robbie.
No such thing, Constable Anderson. You do your job, I'll do mine.
Mike. Your job is real estate. Would you at least lower it, please? Pause. Come on, Robbie. It's in my face, and I know it's loaded. Robbie grudgingly lowers the .38. Hatch, meanwhile, is looking nervously at the open door and the overturned walker. Mike. What happened? Robbie.
I was driving over to the town office when I saw Davy Hopewell running down the middle of the street.
Points toward Davy.
He said Martha Clarendon was dead, murdered. I didn't believe him, but it's true. She's awful.
Mike, you said the person who did it was still inside. Robbie.
He spoke to me.
Hatch. And said what? Robbie. Nervous. Lying.
Told me to get out. I think he said for me to get out or he'd kill me too. I don't know. And this hardly seems like the right time for an interrogation.
Mike, what did he look like? Robbie starts to reply, then stops, puzzled. Robbie.
I barely got a look at him.
He got a pretty good one, actually, but he doesn't remember. Mike, to Hatch. Stay on my right. Keep the barrel of that scattergun pointed down, and keep the safety on unless I tell you to take it off. To Robbie. You stay exactly where you are, please. Robbie.
You're the constable.
He watches Mike and Hatch start for the gate, then calls. Robbie.
The TV's on. Tuned quite loud. If the guy starts moving around, I'm not sure you'll hear him.
Mike nods, then goes through the gate with Hatch on his right. The townspeople have crept closer yet. We now see them in the background. The snow swirls around them in the high wind. It's still light, but thickening up. 77. Exterior, Mike and Hatch from the porch. They come up the walk, Mike tuned tightly, but in control, Hatch scared, but trying not to show it. Hatch.
Even if there was a guy, he's probably gone out the back by now, don't you think? She ain't got but a 5-foot garden fence.
Mike shakes his head to indicate he doesn't know, then taps his lips with a forefinger, indicating that Hatch should keep quiet. They stop at the foot of the steps. Mike pulls gloves out of his coat pockets and puts them on. He also takes out his own pistol. He indicates for Hatch to put on gloves, and Hatch hands him the shotgun so he can comply. Mike takes the opportunity to double-check the safety, still on, then hands it back. They go up the steps and examine the walker. Then they cross the porch. They see the feet, clad in their old lady shoes, poking out from the shadows of the hallway and exchange a dismayed glance. They go in. 78. Interior. The hall of Martha's house. Behind them, the weather lady runs on endlessly. Weather lady. Voice.
Conditions along the New England coast are expected to worsen dramatically toward sunset. Not that our down east friends are going to see the sun go down tonight, I'm afraid. We are expecting gale force winds along the Massachusetts and New Hampshire coasts, and hurricane force wind gusts along the Maine coast and offshore islands. There's going to be significant beach erosion, and once the snow starts to fall, amounts will increase dramatically until, well, until it's over. At this point, it is literally impossible to talk about accumulations. Let's just say the total fall is going to be enormous. 3 feet? That's probable. 5 feet? Even that is possible. You'll want to stay tuned for updates, and be assured we'll break into our programming if conditions warrant doing so.
The two men ignore her. They have more immediate problems. They kneel on either side of the dead woman. Mike Anderson is grim, shocked, but holding it in, already focusing on the job at hand and the ramifications to follow. Hatch, on the other hand, is close to losing it. He looks up at Mike, face pale, eyes full of tears. He speaks in a bare whisper. Hatch.
Mike. Oh, my God, Mike. She got no face left. She...
Mike reaches out and puts a gloved finger across Hatch's lips. He inclines his head toward the sound of the babbling TV. Someone might be listening. Mike leans toward a shaking deputy over the body of the dead woman. Mike, very low. Are you going to be all right? Because if you're not, I want you to hand me the 12-gauge and go back to Robbie. Hatch, low.
I'm all right.
Mike, sure? Hatch nods. Mike considers him, then decides to believe him. He gets to his feet. Hatch does the same, then sways a little. He puts a hand on the wall to catch his balance and smears some of that fine blood spatter. He looks at his gloved hand with amazement and dismay. Mike points up the hall to the living room door and the sound of the TV. Hatch gathers his courage and nods. Very slowly, the two men slip up the hallway. All played for maximum suspense, of course. They are three-quarters of the way up the hall when the sound of the TV abruptly cuts off. Hatch's shoulder brushes one of the pictures on the wall and knocks it off. Mike catches it before it can clatter to the floor, mostly by good luck and fast reflexes. He and Hatch exchange a strained glance, then go on. 79. Interior. The doorway between hall and living room. The two men come into the doorway, looking at them from the living room as we are. Hatch is on the left and Mike on the right. They look at 80. Interior, the living room, from Mike and Hatch's point of view. We see the blown-out TV and Martha's wing chair. Over the top of the chair, we see the top of Linoja's head. Very still. It's probably a man's head, but it's impossible to tell if the guy is alive. 81. Interior. Resume hall doorway with Mike and Hatch. They exchange a glance, and Mike nods them forward. Camera follows as they move in on the back of the chair, very slowly. Three steps into the room, Mike gestures for Hatch to move out wider. Hatch does so. Mike moves in a step closer to the chair. We can see it now as well as the men. Then stops as a blood-stained hand appears. It goes to the table beside the chair and takes a cookie. Mike levels his gun. Freeze. The hand does just that, freezes in midair holding the cookie. Mike, raise your hands. Both hands up over the chair. I want to see them clear as day. There are two guns pointed at you, and one of them's a scatter. Linoge raises his hands. He's still holding the cookie in his left one. Mike indicates that Hatch should circle the chair to the front on his side. As Hatch does, Mike circles around on the right. 82. Interior. Martha's living room. Angle on the chair. Linoge sits there, hands raised, face composed. There's no sign of a weapon, but the men react to his blood-stained face and coat. Linoge's calm demeanor is in sharp contrast to Mike and Hatch, who are wound as tight as guitar strings. Maybe we see here how suspects are sometimes shot by accident. Mike, hands together. Linoge puts his hands together, wrist to wrist and back to back. 83, omit. 84, exterior, in front of Martha's house. Several townsfolk hurry forward as far as the trunk of Robbie's car. One is an older woman named Roberta Coyne. Roberta Coyne.
What's happened to Martha?
Robbie, shrill, near hysteria.
Just stay back. This is under control.
He points his pistol at the house again, and I think we have a real question about what may happen when and if Mike and Hatch bring their prisoner out. Robbie is on a hair trigger. 85. Interior. The living room of Martha's house. Extreme close-up. Cuffs. Mike, voice. If he moves, shoot him. Camera draws back to include Linoge, Mike, Hatch. Linoge, low, pleasant, and composed.
If he shoots, he'll get us both. That thing's still loaded with buckshot.
Both men react to this, not because it's true, but because it could be true. Hell, Hatch might blow a hole through Mike in any case. The two men are quite close together. Linoge.
Also, he's still got the safety on.
Hatch reacts with terrified realization. He has forgotten to take off the safety, while Mike inexpertly fumbles the cuffs onto Linoge's wrists. Hatch fumbles the safety off. As he does, the gun leaves the vicinity of Linoge completely. We need to see that Linoge could take these two courageous but fumbling locals anytime he wants, but chooses not to do so. The cuffs are on. Mike steps back, very relieved. He and Hatch exchange a rather wild look. Linoge.
But you remembered to wear gloves. That was good.
He begins to eat the cookie, oblivious of his blood-streaked hand. Mike. On your feet. Linoge finishes the last bite of cookie and gets obediently to his feet. 86. Exterior, Martha Clarendon's porch. Beyond it, the snow is now coming hard, with the wind driving it into slanting lines. The houses on the far side of the street are misty, as if seen through a veil. Mike and Linoge come out side by side, Linoge with his hands cuffed at belt level, a look all of us are familiar with from the evening news. Hatch is walking behind them, with the shotgun at port arms. In the street, there are now about a dozen people clustered by the rear bumper of Robbie's Lincoln. When the men come out, Robbie crouches a little, and Mike sees the man's little glove compartment gun pointed at them. Mike, put that down. Looking slightly ashamed, Robbie does. Mike, Hatch, close the door. Hatch, is that wise? I mean, aren't we supposed to leave stuff pretty much like it is? It being a crime scene and all? Mike, we leave the door open and the crime scene's going to be under 6 feet of fresh powder. Now close the door. Hatch tries. One of Martha's shoes is in the way. He squats. Grimacing, he moves her foot with one gloved hand. Then he gets up and closes the door. He looks at Mike, who nods. Mike. What's your name, mister? Linoge looks at him. There's a beat when we're not sure he's going to answer. Then, Linoge.
Andre Linoge.
Mike. Well, come on, Andre Linoge. Let's get walking. 87. Exterior. Linoge. Close up. For just a moment, Linoge's eyes change. They swirl with black, the blue irises and the whites disappearing. Then everything goes back to normal. 88. Exterior. Resume porch with Mike, Hatch, and Linoge. Mike blinks at the sight like a man trying to cope with a momentary attack of vertigo. Hatch hasn't seen it, but Mike has. Linoge smiles at him as if to say, our little secret. Then we see Mike's rationality reasserting itself, and he gives Linoge a poke. Mike, come on, move. They go down the steps. 89. Exterior, on the concrete path. The storm blows snow past them, smacking their faces, making them wince. Hatch's hat blows off. As he looks helplessly after it, Linoge gives Mike that look again, the one that says they have a secret. Mike is less able to shake it off this time, but he gets Linoge moving. Fade out. This ends Act 3.